हरि ओम सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सहवीर्यंकरवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तुमाविद्विषावहै ओम शांति 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 ओम जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरि गौर भक्त वृंद हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे। So Krishna's come to the assembly to try to work out a settlement between the two parties, and he's spoken what he considers as the points of to appreciate, and then now he's saying that he will now repeat the messages of the Pandavas themselves. Krishna repeated what Yudhishthira had said before Krishna departed. At your command, quote, "At your command, O king, we have spent 13 years in exile, expecting you would keep your word. As we have carefully kept our pledge, so we ask you to keep yours. We have suffered greatly and now desire to return to our kingdom. O Bharata, you know the principles of virtue. Act towards us as a father should act towards his sons. We will act as your sons. You are our worshipable elder. If you find us remiss in our duties, do not hesitate to correct us. O King, set us on the proper course and thereby follow the excellent path of virtue." Dhritarashtra shifted on his throne as shafts of sunlight illuminated his painful expression. His guilt at having mistreated Pandu's sons bothered him more than anything else. They had been brought to him as young children after their father, his brother, had died. Certainly, he should treat them no differently than his own sons. This was surely his greatest sin, that he neglected and even inflicted suffering on those deserving his protection. Tears fell from his blind eyes as Krishna continued. In an assembly where virtue is overcome by vice, it is the duty of the members of that assembly to remove it by all means. If vice is not removed, then it will kill all of those who have participated in it. If vice prevails over virtue, falsehood over truth, then those who allow it will be ruined. Right? So that's the Manu makes that point, is that when you're dealing with justice, then the whole point of punishment, it's a very powerful entity, in that if it's applied properly, then everything goes very nicely. But if there is some politics or some untruth or some other considerations that aren't actually appropriate, then it will destroy those who were involved. So people can say, "As oh no, but I didn't make the decision." But it says you're in the court; you didn't try to overcome it. Maybe you couldn't overcome it, but it will destroy everybody. And so it's very, very important to note that, because otherwise nowadays, in the the kind of contemporary environment where the tendency is to go from leadership into bureaucracy. Because everybody votes, and then the majority voted. What could I do? I abstained, or I voted against, or like this and that. But if one's simply using that as an excuse, then if there's any wrong by that group, it will affect you also. This is the thing, is that you can say but we don't work by those systems. But that doesn't matter. It's God's laws. It's the laws of nature, and so those laws will catch. So that's what Yudhishthira is pointing out. So that means not only will it affect Dhritarashtra, and of course Duryodhana, Shakuni, and Karna, but anybody else who didn't try, like you see in that whole assembly. It means Vidura spoke up something, Drona, Kripa, and Bhishma, they spoke up. And of others, only Vikarna spoke up, of the brothers of Duryodhana. But everybody else, who is that? They'll all be destroyed. And anybody that's with them that they use to try to protect themselves, then they become implicated in it, they become destroyed. So that means all those kings that were there, and all the kings now in the assembly now, them and all of their soldiers who have come there to support them, they'll all be destroyed. That's just how the laws work. So the point is, you know, it's the king's duty to see to justice. But that's why you see the Brahmins and the devotees, they don't have to worry about it. If they're in a position to establish it, then they will. But if it's injustice towards themselves, they don't have to worry. They don't have to retaliate because the laws of nature will take care of it. So you don't have to worry. It means everybody connected will be, you know, punished, you know, suitably. You know, in this case, then it will be quite severe because of what's there. And other things, it might be a light thing, so it'll be light. Whatever, it's balanced. What else could you do but return the Pandavas' kingdom? I desire both your good and what is best for the Pandavas. My words are true, then let the Kurus confirm them and release the Kshatriya race from the shackles of death. Make the large-souled, virtuous Yudhishthiras your ally. Do not destroy these kings for the sake of vice, nor morality for the sake of so-called happiness. Do not mistake good for evil and evil for good. O Lord of the earth, restrain your sons who are too attached to avarice. Kunti's sons are ready to serve you and fight for you. This is my advice. Choose now that recourse which appears best to you, O King. Right, so then you see is that Krishna's pointing out is that if you don't give them back, then all these kings that are there, they're all condemned to death. And it's your decision, simply because your son is badly behaved, that's all. And not only that, he's willing to give up all virtue for his own desire. So he's unqualified like that. But at least you control and between you and him, that's up to you. Everyone remained silent. Having listened carefully to Krishna, the kings were speechless, right? Because if you look at it, see, it's before they would look at it from the point of the political, no, this and that, oh, you always support this one and that one. But Krishna is saying, no, this is just a matter of proper morality or vice. That's all. It's not something more than that. It's just your son's attached to this and that. And this is what you've promised. And if you don't keep your promise, like we see before, Kunti was very worried about her promise, about what she spoke. So if a king speaks something and he doesn't honor it, then no one will care for anything that he says. So that's why kings are always very careful of what they've said, they will do. And then they're respected for that. But like Dhritarashtra, he's remembered only because of his connection with the Battle of Kurukshetra. Other than that, who cares about him? No one could argue with anything he said. Only Duryodhana found fault with him, and he looked at Krishna with a sly smile. Parasaram was among the rishis, and when Krishna finished speaking, he stood to address the assembly. All eyes rested upon him as his voice rang out around the hall. He wore a black deerskin and had matted hair. Right? So black deerskins are worn by the Brahmins. Right? The spotted deer, that'll be worn by the Kshatriyas. His dark eyes glowed and his body shone with a mystical luminosity. He told the assembly a story about the ancient king Dambodbhava. That king had possessed incomparable power, but had become excessively proud and arrogant. He searched continuously for opponents to defeat in battle. One day he heard that the two rishis, Nara and Narayana, were the most powerful men on earth. He went at once to Gandamanana, where they were practicing asceticism, and challenged them. Although they declined, the king insisted. Finally, Nara said, "Fight then if you must, O Kshatriya. Bring your entire army and all your weapons. I will soon destroy your thirst for war." The king attacked the rishi with all his power. Nara pulled up a handful of grass and, imbuing it with mystic power, hurled it at the king and his army. The grass transformed into razor-sharp steel shafts that sliced off the ears and noses of all the soldiers. So many shafts rained down upon them that they were unable to move. Dambodbhava fell at Nara's feet and begged for mercy. The rishi forgave him his insolence and instructed him to never again insult somebody without first establishing his opponent's power. Now, he just hears he is, and then he goes, I'm so powerful I can defeat anybody. He said, first you should actually establish what is your opponent's power. He's the most powerful. Then you should find out what is that power, because otherwise maybe you defeated others. But that doesn't mean that they also couldn't be defeating them. So you don't take it, oh, I defeated, and so therefore I'm the most powerful. Parasaram looked around the assembly. Nara's feat was wonderful. Narayan is capable of still greater deeds. So just Nara dealt with them alone. He's just sitting. He just picks up some grass and chants some mantras and throws it. He didn't even have to get up. And this power then brings the kings to the knees. And Narayana is more powerful. Those two high soul-minded rishis are now present as Arjuna and Krishna. Do not, like the vain Dambodbhava, try to face them in battle. Men suffer from eight vices that steal their life duration. Desire, anger, greed, vanity, insolence, pride, malice, and selfishness. Influenced by these evils, men are bewildered and act like fools. O heroes, do not fall victim to these vices and lose your lives. No one can defeat Arjuna within the three worlds. And Janardana exceeds him. Right? So even he's not fighting, just he's there. Right? So his point is that Arjuna can defeat anyone in the universe. So what's your chance? You know? Make peace with them and do what is good for yourselves and the whole world. And you see, Yudhishthir is willing. He's like, Dhritarashtra is like a father figure, so they'll just be allies and support. So if there's any problem for the kingdom, they're ready to defend it. Like that. So such a wonderful offer. The most powerful, most pious and powerful persons on the planet that would be allies. You know, and then if they're allied, then Krishna and Dwarka will be allied. You know, Drupad, he's so powerful. Like this, they'd have so much power. But instead, then they are foolish. Then another Rishi, Kandwa, spoke, confirming what Parasaram said about Nara and Narayana. He added, one should not consider he who possesses great physical strength powerful. Real strength lies in virtue. The Pandavas are virtuous. Furthermore, Krishna, the reservoir of all virtue, is on their side. Those five heroes combined with Krishna are no less than Dharma. Vayu, Indra, and the twin Ashvini gods, united with Vishnu. O Duryodhana, how will you even look at them? Effect peace at once or be annihilated. Right? So, because you see here in the Vedic culture, how much it is the free will is there. That you can make your choice and all that. That they're the kings, they're doing, and so the rishis are saying, Krishna himself is the Supreme Personality of Godhead is saying, you know, the Pandavas are saying. But at the same time, as you have that free will, but what free will you apply, that's the results you get. You use virtue, you'll get nice results. You don't use virtue, then you'll get bad results. Duryodhana breathed heavily. His brow contracted, right? The more he hears that these others are powerful, instead of going, okay, let me think about it, he just becomes more angry because he thinks he is the center of the universe. That's all. And fulfilling his desires is the only purpose of the creation. So as soon as you hear others are powerful in this and he has to do something that he doesn't want to do, he's like a big spoiled baby. He gazed at Karna and laughed aloud when Kanwa stopped speaking. Slapping his thigh, because remember, slapping the thigh is always the kind of an insulting thing. It's very low class and all that, especially to do it in an assembly. So now he's done that before to Bhima, you know, in connection with Draupadi. Bhima said he'll break the thigh, and now he's doing it again with this Kanva Muni. And he did it even before, I think, with Markandeya. He said defiantly, I am whatever God has made me. It is he who created me and he who decides my fate. I will do exactly as he has determined and nothing else. What use is this discussion? So he forgets that he has free will. Yes, according to your previous desire, God's made you to be like this. So he lacks virtue in that. But it still doesn't mean he can't use his intelligence and make a decision like that. You know. So That's the point. But he's just saying, no, I've been made like this, and so if I do like this, it's not my fault. You know, I was made like this. So, see, as him and his father, they cannot take responsibility. They will make choices and apply the free will when it's for their benefit. But if they think it's not for their benefit, then they'll just go, what can I do? I was made this way. The prince had little faith in any supreme power, and his voice dripped with sarcasm. He looked at Karna, and both of them smiled. They were not interested in the rishi's words. Then Narada spoke. I mean, look at this assembly, right? Nard's here, Kanva Muni, Parasuram. Like Parasuram, he narrated an ancient history about a king who had suffered as a result of his own obstinacy and ignorance. In conclusion, he said, O ruler of the earth, listen to your well-wisher's advice. Obstinacy leads to ruin. Abandon your anger and vanity and make peace with the Pandavas. Reflect carefully on this story I've just told, which is full of profound instructions and is approved by learned men. By understanding these instructions and by curbing desire and anger, a man may attain sovereignty over the world. By acting otherwise, one achieves only destruction. So he wants to have sovereignty over the world. So he's saying how to do it, because the Pandavas would be their allies. They would still be the emperor. So they would, right now they're the emperor, and then there's a problem. They're going to have this big war. But if they give the Pandavas their half of the kingdom, then they'll be the emperors of the world and have as allies the Pandavas and others. So you can see is that his obstinacy will not result in sovereignty over the world. It will result in total destruction. Duryodhana said nothing. Dhritarashtra lifted his hand and replied, O Narada, what you have said is true. I wish for peace, but I am not the master in this case. Means he's just saying, I'm not the master. He wishes for it, but he's not the master. It's being left with his son Duryodhana, who's not actually the emperor. Means he manages things, but technically it's his father's decision. But because of his attachment, he's not the master, means he's controlled by his affections. And in this case, it'll be for the destruction of both him and his son. Dhritarashtra turned towards Krishna, who sat easily on his throne, one foot on the seat and the other resting on the cushion at his feet. O Keshava, I accept what you have said as the truth. What you have said is for our benefit and the benefit of the world. By following your words, we can attain heaven. Dhritarashtra's words surprised no one. He always knew what to say, what was right and wrong, but his acts belied his words. Right? Because he knows what's right. He's a Rajarshi. He's been trained very well. So he knows. You know, he's from the Kuru dynasty, so he knows very nicely what is right and what's wrong. And if it's not about his son, he'll rule very well, very justly. But when it comes to his son, he's so overwhelmed by his attachments that he can't, like he said, he's no longer the master. As his audience expected, he wanted to make his excuses yet again. So Duryodhana made his excuses, and now Dhritarashtra. But I am not my own master. O best of men, try to persuade my wicked son Duryodhana, who disregards all scriptural injunctions and never does what pleases me. He will not listen to me, and neither will he hear from Vidura, Bhishma, or any of his elders. Please instruct him, Krishna. If you can correct my son of crooked intellect and sinful heart, then you will perform your duty as a friend. Right? So now he's putting on him. If you can do it, you've performed your duty as a friend. And if you don't, then it's your fault. But he's the father. Father's in a more responsible position. So basically all he has to do is tell Bhishma that take the guards and lock the boy up. You know, this is how it's going to be. I'm going to give everything like that. And if he likes it, he can take his part, a natural position in the kingdom, as he is doing. Or if not, he can stay in jail until he's ready to. But he won't do it. So he says, it's not in my hand. But all he has to do is just control him, either by telling him this is the way it's going to go. And if he goes with it, great. And if he doesn't, then, you know, lock him up for a while. You know, it means basically he'd be under house arrest in his own house. But the point is that, you know, he has to be controlled. Krishna turned towards Duryodhana. I will speak only for your good, O best of the Bhartas. I desire prosperity and happiness as much as you do. What you are contemplating will make you suffer. Wise men in this world act only for virtue and profit. Thus, they fulfill their desires. What you are proposing will not fulfill your desires. Your obstinacy is vicious, frightful, and destructive. It will hurt you, and there is no reason for it. Give it up. Pursue instead a course that will benefit you, your brothers, your followers, and your friends. Or chastise your foes, make peace with your cousins. This will please your father and all the Kuru elders. Your father has commanded you to seek peace. A good man never neglects his father's order. Nor does he ignore the advice of friends who know what is good. One who disregards the orders of seniors and the advice of well-wishers will be consumed as one who eats poisonous fruits dies. He never achieves his goal and is ultimately left sunk in remorse. Right, so Krishna's come up to this point, and then we'll see how how things unfold. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.